the other two splitting, one each side. Gonna board us, Ryan.
Can we stop them?
Mildred stood somewhere underneath him and a little to his left.
No, go out on top and they'll pick us off. Just keep moving and hope not many get on.
Sure they don't have grins?
I never saw any.
What?
Boy said he never saw any.
Might they not... My apologies for my elbow, Dr. Wyeth. Might these villainous creatures not attempt to puncture our tires?
Not with what they got, Doc.
Hang on. Dark Knight.
There was a crash from the front of the vehicle, and for a few moments its forward momentum slowed. Then the impediment was gone, and they rolled steadily on.
Ah! Sank one boat! Went right under us.
Hope the bastards drown.
They swim real good, like fucking fishes. Sorry. Rona told me not to use bad words.
Ryan wished he were closer to Dean, able to comfort the boy, but movement was impossible. They had to endure the cramped conditions for as long as it took. All of them heard the clattering of boots above their heads. Something bumped on the right side, and there were more feet. JB swerved the wag, trying to deter any other boarders. Immediately next to Ryan, there was a ferocious clanging on the hatch, but the locks were strong enough.
See the other boats?
No, had to close the ob slit in front. Some triple bastard tried to push a spear through it. Definitely one sunk. Think one of the others got swamped. One on the left. But we got us around six extra passengers.
The little light in the compartment barely reached the panel of instruments, 18 inches below Ryan's right hand.
Which one did you hit that moved the turret, Doc?
I'm not sure. Upon my soul, I'm running a mite short of breath. I think it was the big round one, to the left.
Ryan stretched down, peering to try to read the label beneath the control. But it had long faded into illegibility. Still, it was worth a try. He got his fingers on it and turned it sharply to the right.
What was that?
Scaly's going swimming.
We knocked off some of them. Hear anything up top?
It was difficult to make out anything above the noise of the engine. Ryan was closest, and he strained to hear, but there didn't seem to be any sound. They now had a serious combat dilemma. Since there was no way of seeing out in the darkness, they had no means of knowing whether the swiveling gun had swept all their attackers into the Hudson, or just some of them.
Can't tell. You got your ob slit open again?
Yeah, nothing either side. We're going against the stream and the wind. Bastards will be pushed to keep up in the boats they got left. Reckon we got clear of them.
How are we going to get back to the gateway?
Mildred's question was fair. In his desire to head away from the Scaly's base, Ryan had automatically chosen to move north, along the western side of the Ville. But he knew that the hidden redoubt was in the opposite direction. To turn back meant going past the muties again, and he had no idea how much fuel the wag carried or what its consumption might be.
That river, the Harlem. Anyone know where it comes out?
Comes out about 12 miles north of where we are, into the Big River. Then runs down into the other big river, clear through the Ville.
You sure?
I'm sure, Ryan.
You hear that, JB?
No, something about the Harlem River.
Boy says if we keep north about 2 hours, then we'll see it on our right. Follow it on down and we can get back.
Eventually, Ryan took a chance and cautiously unlocked the main hatch near his head. He lifted it a scant quarter inch and peered out into the cold air, fresh in his face after the stinking fog inside the wag. He could see most of the deck of the vehicle, except what was directly behind him. Holding the drawn Sig Sauer in his right hand, he took a further chance and heaved the hatch all the way back. Ryan heaved himself up, facing toward the rear, ready to shoot down a lurking Scaly.
Empty.
The remainder of the trip northward was almost pleasant. The biting norther eased back, and JB was able to throttle down, chugging along at a steady 3 miles an hour. Gradually, the sky began to lighten toward the east. Seen from the wide, powerful river, it was possible to appreciate the appalling devastation that New York had suffered more than 100 long, long years earlier. Ryan, JB, and Christy had seen pictures of occasional snatches of crackling vid that had given glimpses of pre-nuke life. But to Doc Tanner and Mildred Wyeth, the past was almost their present. Their concept of then was close to now. As the dawn rose gently to their right, all of the companions left the cramped compartment and stood on the cold deck of the wreck wag. JB had his obsolete thrown fully open. Mildred had managed to work her way forward and was now perched close by JB, on the sloping bow of the vehicle as it thrust through the shallow swell. She constantly turned her head to the right, toward the shattered, silhouetted ruins of the ville. Christy had been moving to join her when she saw that there were tears streaming down the black woman's cheeks. Christy turned away to join Ryan, sitting with Dean in the lee of the turret. Doc was standing up, his gray hair streaming behind him, looking like some wild-eyed prophet seeking a promised land of golden spires. Dean was looking toward the Jersey swamps, arms around his knees. Christy noticed that Ryan had given him back the small knife with the Navajo turquoise hilt, and it was stuck in his belt. Seeing them huddled close together for warmth, her heart was wrenched by the similarity between the two. Whatever Ryan might pretend to himself, there was no doubt at all that they were son and father. They had the same sharp, stubborn profile with a slightly hooked nose, deep-set, serious eyes, and tight black curls. Feeling the cold wind about her, making her own sentient hair cling closer to her skull, Christy looked all around them, seeing the charred remnants of concrete buildings drifting by, with coils of cooking smoke rising farther inland. As far as she could see, there was nothing else moving on the river. She could see that Ryan and the boy were talking, and she nearly went to join them, wondering what strange secrets they were telling each other. For the first time since she'd met Ryan Carter, Christy felt a violent pang of jealousy.
Mind if I stand with you, Doc?
Why, of course not, young lady.
They moved steadily onward, toward the beckoning mouth of the Harlem River. When the 10-year-old came and sat on the cold, damp stern of the wreck wag, Ryan took several long, slow breaths. He could face a dozen ravening stickies without flinching, but knowing he was going to talk with his own son, it was inconceivably difficult.
You warm enough, Dean?
Yeah.
Shouldn't be too long before we get to the gateway and make the jump.
What's a gateway? And what's a jump? Never heard of them.
Ryan
tried to explain about the Matrans units, mostly buried or hidden and long lost, about how none of them knew how they worked or how to control them.
You get in this room, and then you're someplace somewhere else and you don't know where? Is that it, Ryan?
Sure, but it's not magic. It's science. Lost science. Doc knows a bit about it.
He wondered whether he should try to explain to the boy that Doc had been trawled forward from the 19th century, then pushed forward just before Skydark ended the old world. No, better to leave Doc for some other time. Dean's hand was playing nervously with the greenish-blue hilt of his slim knife.
There's lots I don't know.
A man I used to know, called Trader, used to say that he didn't mind a man admitting he didn't know something, but he couldn't stand someone pretending to know something he didn't.
Rona told me about Trader. Said he was real triple scary.
Only to people who didn't know him. Best friend a man could have.
Where is he?
Dead. I think he's dead. Yeah, dead.
Tell me about these people.
Who?
Doc and the redhead and the black woman and the guy driving.
They're friends.
Did they know my mother?
No. Well, J.B. Dix knew her. But only sort of casual, for a few days back in Taos. 10 years or so away.
Rona said you... Tell me about your friends.
Sure. The redhead's called Christy Roth.
For the next 15 minutes or so, Ryan talked on, giving a potted biography of each of the quartet of companions. The boy listened to him, only interrupting with an occasional question. He was particularly interested in what kind of weaponry they each carried. Ryan's own Heckler & Koch G-12 caseless assault rifle fascinated him.
Wow, I never saw anything like that in all Deathlands.
There might not be anything else much like it left now.
Once Ryan's account was finished, they both sat silent, watching the bubbling wake of the wag. Occasionally, a fish would break the surface, leaving a momentary ring on the water. Once, something much bigger, long and coiled, followed them for a few minutes, a brutish, blunt head just visible. It seemed as if the boy wanted to talk, as though he had something that was strung up inside him. But the cork was firmly jammed into the bottle, and Ryan couldn't see any way clear to help Dean lever it out.
Ryan?
What?
Did you...
What?
I mean, how did you find me? Did you come in after me, or was it... sort of luck?
No such thing as luck, son.
Everyone makes their own luck. We only just missed you in that stinking cellar.
How come?
The Scalies had lifted you.
But what about Janya?
The woman who was looking after you? Chilled. The young boy nodded.